Hour number three on this Thursday afternoon. Darren McFarland and Willie Donick here with you, live here at Bridgestone Arena. Maple Leafs and Predators tonight. Puck drop at 7, pregame at 6. Everything heard right here on 102.5 The Game. Just a one game. It's not even a home stand. It's just a home game. Stand means, implies you're going to be here for a while. Predators will hit the road right after tonight's game. They will be up in Minnesota and Winnipeg over the weekend. We say hello to Matt Miller, who is Bleacher Report's NFL Draft expert on Twitter, at NFL Draft Scout. He joins us. He's also the host of Stick to Football. Matt, how you doing?
Doing well, guys. Thanks for having me on. You just missed me. I was just in Nashville last week.
Oh, really? For what?
Just to get away, just to have a nice little break before the craziness of draft season. So I do that every spring. I load up with a couple buddies, and we go act like idiots for a couple days. And that's a great spot to do it.
Yeah, I was going to say, well, and our city loves to host people to have those type of weekends, and so I hope you had a good time.
Absolutely did.
If you were the Cleveland Browns or somebody at the very top, it is interesting, Matt, how we've all changed. Well, not we all. I'm just going to say NFL teams seem to be singing a different tune these days after the likes of Todd Gurley and Ezekiel Elliott and then Leonard Fournette, because it looked like running backs were dinosaurs, right? They were a dying breed. But now all of a sudden there's this resurgence. So now everybody's back to falling in love with these premier running backs. If you're a team at the top, do you take Barkley at the top? Are you willing to risk the first or second pick to take a running back?
You know, I'm not. And I think I would be if I had a quarterback. So I think that, like, the Browns at one should draft a quarterback. Now at four, it's a really different conversation because you would have your quarterback at that point, ideally. I think the Giants are an interesting team because of the existence of Eli Manning. They also have a quarterback they drafted in the third round last year in Davis Webb. So they kind of have it set up a little bit at the quarterback position where they could go running back. But I do think that positional value is still a very real thing. So, and we see the Giants today trade Jason Pierre-Paul. They might just take Bradley Chubb from NC State and just, you know, kind of go that old school route of getting big guys on the lines or a quarterback with those early picks. So Saquon's an amazing prospect. I mean, he's as clean as they come on and off the field, but it's that positional value and the importance of quarterback, pass rusher, left tackle, probably why, you know, he might be the, you know, fourth or sixth pick when it, you know, all comes down to it in April.
There's already been so much quarterback movement, and some of these guys were starters, and I don't know if they anticipate on being starters in their new homes or not, but some interesting signings from teams that you had them shoot as shoe-ins to take a quarterback in the draft, and that still may be the case. So my question to you, Matt, is do they not trust this class? Why do you think teams that we all anticipate at the top drafting a what they think is going to be their franchise quarterback still making significant quarterback signings in the free agency period? What did that tell you?
Well, I think it goes team by team. I do think that these quarterbacks are valued in this draft, but they're all looked at as, like, everyone wants that you know, Kansas City Chiefs thing right now of you want the Alex Smith to draft Pat Mahomes. And so I think, like, Cleveland trading for Tyrod Taylor, giving up a third-round pick for a one-year rental, basically, but you get a veteran quarterback who's going to win you some games, which they need to do. They've had one win in 2 years, so they need to get some points on the board. He'll allow them some breathing room to do that while, excuse me, also developing their quarterback of the future. You know, I think it's the same thing with the Jets. They signed Josh McCown. They signed Teddy Bridgewater, but they also at the same time trade up to get the third pick in the draft, which tells me they're going to draft a quarterback at that spot. Denver, they go get Case Keenum, but they also are a favorite to draft a quarterback. So a lot of these teams are being aggressive in signing free agents, but at the same time, these free agents they're signing aren't, you know, it's not like they went and got Kirk Cousins or Drew Brees. They're more looked at as stopgap type players.
Matt Miller on the line with us, Bleacher Report NFL draft expert. It's been a while, and it's refreshing, quite honestly, Matt, for us to actually be talking about the Titans taking a pick late in the first round. I feel like we've been talking about the Titans having a top five pick for many, many years now. They picked 25. What do you think? What do you anticipate being there? Is there still good value at 25 in your opinion?
You know, 25 is a tough spot because you know, you guys probably know most NFL teams don't have 32 first-round grades. You know, it's usually 15, 16, maybe 17. So when it comes down to it, the Titans are in a spot where there is going to be a little bit of a drop-off. I think the good news is the depth of those players that you would consider round two is actually pretty good this year. They've also been able to be somewhat aggressive in free agency, getting Malcolm Butler. I think that fills a gigantic need for them. So they're still in a good spot, especially with the needs of the team, whether you view it as D-line, outside linebacker, maybe another receiver is going to be a need at some point. Those are all pretty good positional values when you start to look at pick 25 that, you know, you are in a pretty good spot to get an impact front seven defender. Or if, I mean, it might be a little early to go back to wide receiver after drafting Corey Davis at five last year, but it is still a need, especially for depth. So that's also a spot where we're going to see that second tier wide receiver start to become valuable.
How do you value Lamar Jackson? What do you see him as? How high should he go? Will he go in the first? And what do you see his future as?
No, I view him as a quarterback. I'm glad we kind of as a national media are moving past that, you know, and it's like, okay, this guy's a quarterback. Let's talk about his strengths and weaknesses there. I see him as probably an early second round pick, you know, to those teams that miss out on a quarterback in round one, like Arizona, or teams that start to need a quarterback of the future, you know, like the Chargers, the Ravens, maybe even the Steelers. Those are teams that I would look at as a would be in play for him if the draft goes like we expect and the Bills are able to trade up and get a quarterback. Otherwise, he could be in play for them in round two. But, you know, I like his game a lot. He's a rare prospect. I've been doing this since 2011, and I've never seen anyone like him who has that athleticism, a super quick release as a passer. Well, at the same time, he has some deficiencies that are a little scary. You know, his mechanics are really poor. His accuracy at times was very spotty on what I would call NFL-type throws, you know, outside the hashes, up the seam. I think those were the places he struggled. And, you know, he was able to make some passing windows happen with his feet. And given his frame, I don't know if he's going to be able to do that very long in the NFL. So he's a challenging guy to evaluate. I feel like he's going to be hit or miss, which is why I have him in round two. I know there are a lot of people that have said he's the best quarterback in the draft. I know there are other people who say you should play receiver. So it is definitely a polarizing opinion when it comes to him.
Matt, just taking a look at a couple of dynamics here that are maybe tougher to track. I'm curious what you think of – let's take the Browns for the most obvious example, but there's been a lot of rumors over the years of, you know, I'm not sure if I'm a quarterback, I want to go to Cleveland. They've had so much trouble over the years. They've turned over all kinds of quarterbacks. If you're Cleveland, how would you try to quantify that factor, especially with some of the candidates that are out there? How much would you try to – would you even take a guy that was lower on your board slightly in exchange for a guy that enthusiastically wants the challenge of turning them around?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question, and it is something that they have to be aware of. You know, I know that Adam Schefter said at one point Josh Rosen didn't want to play in Cleveland, and then Rosen had to come out and say, like, hey, I'll play anywhere. I really don't care. But that has to factor into it. And I think when you are a franchise that in your rebirth has always been bad, I mean, we're almost on 20 years of this team being the worst in the NFL, you have to find a quarterback who has that attitude of, I'm going to come in here and turn this around, while at the same time being careful that you don't want a lightning rod type quarterback like Johnny Manziel was, who maybe is going to generate some attention negatively or attention off the field. I would say that probably puts guys like Sam Darnold or Josh Allen more in play for them just because of that, you know, kind of quiet all-football demeanor that they bring to the table. You know, I do like Josh Rosen and I do like Baker Mayfield, but, you know, if the Browns have a rough stretch, you don't want Baker Mayfield grabbing his crotch yelling across the field at the Baltimore Ravens, and you don't want Josh Rosen, you know, tweeting about the president when he should be studying his playbook. And these are, like, concerns that I've heard from teams. I'm not just making this stuff up on the fly. So it is something that you really have to be aware of, especially when you're – and I would say it's the same thing for the New York Jets, because the media market they're in, both of those teams drafting in the top three have to be really aware of the personality that they're drafting on top of the type of player they're going to get.
Going back to the Titans, let's take a quarterback question on the bottom half. Let's say if you are looking for maybe a quarterback to start grooming as a backup, we're looking at the market right now. We've been following this now for a few weeks, trying to figure out who the next backup will be to Marcus Mariota. But it would be nice if you could sort of groom a backup to have ready to go down the road, even though you know Mariota is the guy you're going to commit to for the long term. How would you approach that in the draft? And in this particular draft, are there names that come to mind?
Yeah, you know, I think you can look at someone like Kyle Laletta from Richmond, depending on where he kind of lands and where we see his value. You know, if he ends up overvalued and is a third-round pick, that obviously changes things. But someone who has some athleticism, I think that, you know, makes it difficult because of Mariota's skill set as a, not necessarily a runner, but as a mobile guy. And I think in this offense, we're going to see him continue to be, you know, with Matt LaFleur, we're going to see more spread elements like they used in Los Angeles last year with the Rams and try to get him some windows to make plays. So you almost have to look for a guy who has been not in the exact same offense, but maybe something similar. So that narrows the list down even more. You know, maybe like a Riley Ferguson from Memphis would be someone that would be, you know, groomable as a quarterback two type of player. Tanner Lee from Nebraska is a pretty good athlete with a really big arm, but, you know, had wild, wild accuracy problems in college. So it is more difficult, especially in this draft where there's, you know, there's seven quarterbacks that people really like, and they're probably going to go in the first, you know, 75 picks. So if you're the Titans, you don't want to draft a backup quarterback too early. It's probably a day three thing. But at that point, the drop off in this year's class is pretty wild.
What about guards? Because that's always a tricky one. Nobody really wants to take the guard early. The Titans look like they have a need at guard. They could certainly bolster. So what does the guard class look like in this year's draft, especially in those rounds where they're going to be more apt to be picked?
Yeah, it's a really good guard class. I mean, even in the first round, you know, Quentin Nelson's going to be a top 10 pick from Notre Dame. Billy Price, who was at Ohio State, has played center and guard. He tore his pec at the combine, but he has a chance to still be a top 45 pick. James Daniels from Iowa should be a first rounder. Isaiah Wynn from Georgia should be a first rounder. But then you even get into round two, guys like Austin Corbett from Nevada, Will Hernandez from UTEP are both solid round two guys. Alex Kappa from Humboldt State is a really, really good round three type player, as is Braden Smith from Auburn. So it's a good year to need offensive guards. And it'll be interesting to see if teams overvalue them a little bit because it is such a good class, or if we see that traditional positional value hold where teams are like, okay, well, let's just, you know, wait and we'll get a guy like Braden Smith in the third round and we can plug him in and be a starter. I would say that on day three, those rounds four through seven, there is a drop-off at that position where, you know, I think last time I looked at my rankings, it goes from, like, Braden Smith in the 80s to all the way down to Wyatt Teller from Virginia Tech in, like, the 150s. So there is a pretty big drop-off.
Let's ask one with a local angle here. Oren Burks is a guy that we saw for a long time at Vanderbilt, played a pretty unique role, kind of a rover. Sometimes it was hard to tell each week, would you classify him as an outside linebacker or a safety, but he certainly was effective in their system. Where do you see him projecting at the next level?
Yeah, he's a really interesting player. I like him a lot. And like you said, it is, you're watching him sometimes, you're like, okay, where is he going to be this week? I think he projects really well as a weak side type linebacker in the NFL in a more of a 4-3 role. With the league going to so much nickel coverage, it definitely benefits someone like him who has that consistency, or excuse me, that versatility on the back end. So he probably projects as like a round 5 to 6 type player, but I like him a lot. The one thing that could hurt him is that, you know, kind of jack of all trades, master of none, where he has been moved around so much that maybe some of the instincts and, you know, the intricacies of one position haven't been learned. So he's going to have to figure that out a little bit on the go.
What about, real quick, Richie James at Middle Tennessee State? Of course, the Titans already have a guy from MTSU and Kevin Byard. I don't know if Deion Sanders knows that, but they do have a guy from MTSU. What do you think about Richie James?
God, Deion Sanders. God bless him. I like Richie James. He's a little undersized, but he's quick. You know, obviously, guys that size, they're going to have to add play strength. I think it would be really nice. A special teams player, kind of a role player in your wide receiver package, get him on some bubble screens. But I do really, really worry about size, and especially with some of the injuries that he's had. So I have like a round 5 to 6 grade on him. I wouldn't be shocked if he can stay healthy, if if he outplays that. But, you know, when you look at, like, playability, he's probably higher than that. When you factor in size and injuries, it starts to push guys down.
Good stuff, Matt, as always. Always good to talk to you. Thanks for doing this, and let us know the next time you're in town.
Will do, guys. Thanks so much for having me.
Matt Miller, Bleacher Report, NFL Draft Expert, at NFL Draft Scout on Twitter. Give him a follow. He's really good at what he does. Also the host of Stick to Football. Still laugh at the whole Deonta. I have not changed my – I still don't believe he knew.
Have we had any comments from Deon since in the fallout?
No.
It was amazing to me that they put that on the lead. You go to ESPN.com, it was like the third or fourth story. I don't know if it was just a slow day. Maybe there's a combination, but it was high on the list.
Well, I mean, you know, that does grab people's attention.
I guess
Deion
so.
Sanders still is a big deal. He still has name value.
I think the T-shirt campaign needs to move forward.
I'm perfectly fine with what Kevin Byard did. Stick up for yourself, young man. You deserve it. You earned it. You had a heck of a season. You deserve the respect, and you know what? He did it in a respectful way. I didn't have a problem with how he talked to Deion Sanders on Twitter. I thought it was done the right way. Don't have a problem with it at all. Good for Kevin Byard, the way I look at it. All right, we'll come back with more. Willie, you've got a word about Lee Company.
Let's tell you what's going on with Lee Company. 567-1000 is the number. We're sitting here at Bridgestone Arena. And when you come into Bridgestone Arena, you might walk past the display that has Nash and a gentleman from Lee Company going through the bathrooms for the plumbing services. Just a comic skit, because it says Lee Company is Nashville's other power play. Well, that's sort of really the idea. The home maintenance plan is something that I talk about a lot, because it's worked very well for my family in our house. Is they have the annual checkups. Now, I'm not one that wakes up every day, you know, wondering, do I need to go down and check the plumbing, the electrical? That's why Lee Company is great. All four systems, plumbing, electric, heating, and cooling, they'll call you, make the annual checkup, they'll come out and make sure everything's running properly, and they'll make some recommendations if they think something needs to be fixed up. And if you do need it fixed up, you get discounts if you're a member on the home maintenance plan. So do it. 567-1000 or go LeeCompany.com. Lee Company, proud sponsor of Nashville Predators. Let their decades of expertise go to work for you.
Gary Parrish is reporting that Celtics assistant coach Walter McCarty will be the next head coach at Evansville. So good for him. So he'll be leaving Brad Stevens' staff, and he'll be the next coach at Evansville. I think you remember him as a player.
I do.
Pretty darn good.
I was an announcer when he was playing. I was doing Vanderbilt's games when they had those phenomenal teams in the mid-90s when they really got it cranking. Of course, he was on the 96 team, which I think some would argue might be the most powerful team of the last 25, 30 years. You could probably put it up with a lot of the best teams ever, really, when you look at the depth of the team. Pretty remarkable.
Best team I ever saw. I can say that.
I saw them get beat one time, and that was, remember, the finals of the SEC tournament in New Orleans. Was it finals or semifinals? I can't remember. They got beat, and Rick Pitino was sort of relieved. Remember, he was like, I kind of like getting that loss off my shoulders, so there's not too much pressure. And then, of course, they pretty much whipped everybody in the tournament.
Mm-hmm. Was a good team.
A good team.
In the regular season, man, they destroyed some teams. In the regular season.
Vanderbilt was one of them.
Sorry.
At Rupp Arena.
Didn't mean to bring up
some
bad memories.
In fact, both meetings that year were not close.
Louisville will interview Chris Mack, who is currently Xavier's head coach. The OVC has announced that they will go back to Evansville, the Ford Center, for the next 2 years. So 2019 and 20 will be OVC men's and women's tournament will be back in Evansville. So not here. Again, they were in Evansville this year, and they will extend it for two more years. There's news on the hockey front. Is it Jokerit? Is it Jokerit? I don't know even why I care. Anybody else cares? It's the KHL. Who cares how we pronounce it? The team that Elie Tolvanen plays for, right now they're playing CSKA. It's tied at one.
I think Jokerit has fallen behind, if I've seen this right, if I'm reading this right. What I'm looking at right now is in Russian. So my Russian is a little bit fuzzy, but I think it's 2-1. And, of course, everybody's wondering what happens if they lose this game. How quick will Elie Tolvanen get signed, get over here? What will they do with him? All of that stuff. But I think that is, you know, the process will begin. He will end up here. It's just a matter of going through the process. And I'm not sure exactly how long that's going to take. But as you and I mentioned yesterday or the day before, the team's going to head out on the road here for a pretty short road trip. So you've got a few days to work out everything that needs to get worked out before I think there's any logistical way that you're going to have him with the group. But we'll keep an eye on that score because first things first, they have to get eliminated. They're
and
down
if they
three
lose,
games to one.
Right, if they lose, they are eliminated. So that would make him eligible to join the Predators. And like you mentioned, they've got back-to-backs over the weekend, and then they're back home all next week for a homestand. Minnesota, San Jose, and Buffalo, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, to close out the month of March. And you do wonder, will he be in the mix if indeed they lose today and they're out of the playoffs? I would say with our discussions and our talks with David Poile, it seems that way, right? He's made no bones about it.
Oh, he's going to be a part of the lineup. It's just a matter of what role he's going to play and how often he's going to play. The way I envision it is it's not a deal where they need him necessarily as we sit here today, but it's a situation where he's a nice guy to have moving forward if you do need him. And I think they will take a look and see what it looks like with him in the lineup. He has got that unique skill set. He can shoot, and the shot translates. If you can score, you can score. It's hard to teach that. But he is going to have to adjust back to playing in the NHL size rink, although he did play in the USHL last year, so he has that background. But, of course, the speed of the game, the time you have to make plays is going to be different than it is in the KHL. So we'll see. One step at a time. It'll be a really fascinating thing to watch, though.
Do you want me to give you some Patrick Laine news?
Yes.
And you're saying, why? They're playing Toronto tonight. Well, because Sunday they play Winnipeg.
They do.
You'll be in the peg.
The peg.
On Sunday. Patrick Laine has a bruise, according to Paul Maurice. And it says 4 to 14 days is the expectation of how long he will be out.
Wow.
So 4 days from today, 1, 2, 3,
nothing broken.
4 would be Sunday. Paul Maurice says it is unlikely he will play against the Preds on Sunday. That's their head coach.
Well, if I'm the Jets, realistically, it's going to be tough to catch the Predators. It's going to be tough for Minnesota to catch Winnipeg. So there's really no huge incentive to rush him back, especially given the depth of their forwards. They have a pretty potent group of forwards, even if you take somebody like Line A out. And that's pretty amazing to think about.
So there is a real good shot Line A will not be in their lineup on Sunday when the Predators face Winnipeg.
All right, it is still 1-1. I misread it in the Russian.
You got excited.
I saw that.
You're trying to eliminate
him.
No,
I'm not. I'm not. It's, you know, whatever
happens.
Well,
what do
happens,
you care about Jokerit? Who cares? Eliminate them.
Okay.
We don't owe anything to Joker it.
I wouldn't mind seeing them lose. I agree.
Yeah.
It's 1-1 in the second. So we'll keep an eye out. We have a penalty on Joker it. Nicholas Anderson. 2 minutes for interference. So the mighty CSKA Moscow group is on the power play. The Tolvanen watch.
There's never been this much – well, we have talked about the KHL a lot in the past when one Rads.
Yeah, the Rad Watch was on.
The Rad Watch. Let's go to Zach in Franklin. Zach, what's up?
Gentlemen, thanks for the chance. As always, I'll be tuned into tonight to the Big Sexy Willie Donick, C. Mace, Kara, and the always lovely and gorgeous, you already know, Lindsay. I wanted to say this, though. I'm thinking C.K. Subban scoring the first goal tonight. I haven't seen him get a lot in the back of the net as of late. He's one of the only ones, so, and you know, as star-studded as he is, I got a feeling that C.K.'s putting one in the back of the net tonight, so... I'm gonna call that, and if it happens,
okay,
you'll hear from me first tomorrow.
Just gonna float that out there. It is time. He's due. PK, I think if you take a look, he was as hot as you can possibly be for a long time. And usually, what happens is you have to go through a little bit of a correction, a regression to the mean. So I do think he's due to sort of start coming back around and heating back up. He's picked
rebound.
Up some assists here. Yeah. And I think part of it is the power play. You look at the power play for the Predators, he has been a huge quarterback for the power play. And the power play has tailed off. They're one for the last 27. They didn't even get a power play goal, a power play opportunity against Buffalo. So I think that's a huge area tonight to look for, because on the other side, you've got Toronto that – is on fire with their power play right now. They're like 9 for the last 15. I looked at it this morning. I can't remember exactly. But they have been just ripping teams, and that's been without Austin Matthews. Now you're going to put him back into the mix. So this will be a big challenge, and I think the Predators, who have a very good power play that's in a downturn, just like PK Subban's a very good offensive defenseman that hasn't scored a goal in a while, at some point it's going to turn back, and hopefully it'll be tonight.
I'm going to be tuned in regardless. Thanks for giving me the chance. I'll be tuned in as always, man. And go Smashville. Thanks.
You know, what's interesting, PK has a career high of 15 goals. So he tied his career high a while back. He's still waiting to set the career high for himself. And it's just been a while.
It has been a while.
It's been a while.
Which does make things.
You could just keep firing away, and this whatever, you know, it hits something, a goalie makes a big save, and for whatever reason, it just doesn't go in. Roman Josi went through a stretch like that earlier this year, and then he just blew up with a huge outburst of points. So I think that's, again, an example of this team doesn't have to have PK Subban or Roman Josi every night having to score. They've got a lot of different guys. And so one guy heats up, another guy's cooling off. But at some point you've got, in any one particular game, enough guys that can provide enough offense.
Robbie Stanley texted me and said, there hasn't been this much attention on a group from Moscow since Red Dawn. Wow, I'm impressed.
Wolverines!
A millennial. Using a 1984 reference?
Yeah, nice.
Good for Robbie Stanley. Red Dawn, I mean, my
Patrick
goodness.
Swayze fan, I guess.
I'm not even sure that was VHS. That may have been pre-VHS.
I feel like we rented
Did
that.
Did we watch
the...
Beta? Was Red Dawn Beta?
I think it was definitely pre-Blockbuster. Like, I think the old local movie store, like.
Right, it was Mom and Pop
Mom
Video.
Mom and Pop Video, no doubt. I can't remember, what was the, I got to think of the one that was in my neighborhood. Yeah, I mean, it was
Jim's video store.
Yeah, it was like that. You rode the bike down there. And
it was in the shopping center.
Had one copy if it was out. Oh, man, Red Dawn's out.
Oh, man.
Can you tell me, is Red Dawn coming? Is that supposed to come back in today? Can you say?
Let me go check. We had some come in. Let's go check the ones that were dropped off. Let me check the Dropbox.
Got any new releases? Yeah, we got one new release today.
All those people out there tilting their head right now.
Say what?
What are you talking about?
Renting videos? What? You never heard of Netflix?
Membership card? What? Did we pay
late
for membership
fee.
Cards?
Late fee. Please
yeah, late fee. Please be kind
please rewind.
And rewind.
What?
Robbie says it's a fantastic film. I agree. I am just impressed.
Yeah.
A 20-something-year-old throwing out the Red Dawn reference. Impressive.
I know Julian's back there going, huh?
Is that a basketball movie?
Red Dawn.
They shoot basketball in that movie?
Is that about Indiana?
That's like Julian talks like that, right? Speak basketball? Throw basketball in that movie?
It was a terrible impression.
No comment from Julian. Did he step out?
When we come back, you know, we talked about what they're discussing in Boca Raton. And we can take it a little bit further. Remember we were talking earlier in the week of they want to make a change. They say a change is inevitable, but yet they don't have the solution. They don't know what the change is going to be. But we'll take that conversation a little bit further on the other side, right? And including Barry Trotz weighing in on this. As Ryan Porth weighs in on a text, what is Red
what
Dawn?
Is Red
of
Dawn?
Course. We would never include you in that conversation, considering Red Dawn was anywhere near the levels of movies that he still hasn't seen. Red Dawn was good, but it wasn't that big. Right? We've gone down the list of movies Ryan still hasn't seen, like, huh? Like I would never think he's seen Red Dawn.
I'm not a gambling man, but I would take
10,000 to one, a million to one that he's seen Red Dawn. Although he is Robbie's roommate, so you never know. Robbie seems to be a fan. But we'll come back and we'll discuss that a little bit more as we wrap up the third hour. Plus, a little bit later, we're going to get into some rule changes that you may not be aware of, and I don't know how you're going to feel about it, but we'll talk about that in the final hour when it comes to minor league baseball. Maybe some of you have seen this by now, but there's some pretty significant rule changes coming our way, and my guess is it's going to have some people ticked off. But we'll get into that a little bit later. You're listening to 102.5 The Game. We had Derek Mason on earlier today. Their spring game is Saturday from 3 until 5 o'clock. Hope a lot of people will go over there and take in the festivities. Take the kids, take the family. It's free. There'll be a lot of things to do. They're going to have face painters and inflatables and all kinds of good stuff as they have their spring game starting at 3 o'clock on Saturday over on West End. Our Twitter timelines are getting blown up here, Willie. One, let's start with the movie. Apparently Red Dawn was remade in 2012.
Yeah, it was. That doesn't count.
I don't remember.
I'm not counting that.
I don't remember that.
I
don't know if Robbie was referencing 2012 or 1984.
I'm not a big fan of reboot. I'm not a reboot guy.
Yeah. So a lot of people
you
say,
better,
hey.
If you reboot a movie, you better bring it really strong. Really strong.
Give me one that was really strong.
You know, I guess you could be influenced by seeing the reboot and not seeing the original. I think if you love the original, you're hard-pressed to like the reboot better.
I agree.
Like the Bad News Bears. Bad News Bears, the original, is one of my top five of all time with Walter Matthau and stuff. So they tried the reboot with Billy Bob Thornton and stuff. I didn't even want to watch it. Because I heard, like, you start hearing, well, it's okay. I was like, then forget it. I'm not watching it.
Yeah, I'm not going to trash 2012 remake of Red Dawn. Yeah. I didn't see it.
I'm not watching it. I'm not going to watch it.
But apparently a lot of you out there did.
Patrick Swayze is my guy.
We knew that he could not be in the 2012.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. But he will always be the Red Dawn.
I agree.
And that crew, that's the guys.
We're also being told on Twitter, did Tolvanen score?
He did, but it was ruled offside.
Oh.
Offside challenge.
Okay, because we're now getting
1-1.
We're getting updates.
Oh, people are following. They're following. You got to pay some money if you want to watch this game.
One of the updates is coming from Finland.
Yeah, there's a lot of Twitter followers following people who are at the game, et cetera. So.
Well, no, I'm saying they're listening to the show, and they're keeping us up. They're from Finland. They're listening to the show.
Okay.
And they're keeping us updated. Because they also said, don't tell Timu Solani that you don't care about Jokerit.
Or Jari Kurri.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, let's not pretend that we care about if they win or lose. We don't. We care if they lose. Because there's implications if they lose.
Sure.
Because the roster would change. Okay. Talking about what they've been doing down in Boca Raton besides taking in the Rays in the beach. Goalie interference is the big to-do between the GMs. I hope they're also discussing Pecorine for Vezina because their votes do count. But they're talking about goalie interference. Barry Trotz weighed in on it. Others have weighed in on it. Where do you think they're going with this?
Well, what they have done, they have recommended the GMs, because remember, they were determined to make a change. So after the hours of discussion they had, they have recommended that the Situation Room in Toronto have the final call. Right now, as it exists, the referee on the ice gets the recommendation from Toronto after they talk back and forth, and the referees look at the monitor, but ultimately, the referee makes the final call. The GMs want to change that. They think they'll get a better level of consistency if Toronto has the final say. In other words, you're on the ice, Darren, you're the referee, I'm in Toronto. I say, Darren, our call is the call on the ice is confirmed, and you got to go along with it. You can't double-cross me. Now, what would happen if you double-cross me? Who would know? No, nobody would know, right?
Oh, well,
you're still the guy that's got to go out there and tell everybody.
No, people in the stands would know, but believe me, people would know.
Well, yeah, but what would he do? I mean,
probably get held out of the playoffs.
Right.
He would be punished somehow.
But, like, what would you do? Like, you couldn't call, like, I'm in Toronto, right? I'm Colin Campbell or wherever, and I'm telling you, and you double-cross me. You don't go with my call. You go on and go the opposite. Do I call the other team and say, guys, you're supposed to actually have a goal there?
No.
You can't do that, right?
I think that will be handled internally the next morning.
But what – okay, well, let's say you're the team and finds out that that happened. You would just go ballistic, wouldn't you?
Well, but, I mean, why would you – would any official be that passionate to be like, you're crazy. That's the wrong call. It's good. Right? I mean, no ref is going to do that.
It will be interesting. But Barry Trotz was one of the first on the record. You know, he's – the great thing about Barry Trotz is he will give you detailed discussion and say, here's what I see it. He likes the fact that you take the emotional side of it out because the referee is in the environment. The crowd could be influencing him. The coaches could be influencing him. Obviously, the Situation Room influences his call. And he said some people are wired that they're going to go in there and they're going to find every way to be able to say, my call on the ice is the right call, right? You're not going to look at it. Well, maybe I was right. Maybe I was wrong. You know, there are some people wired to never admit that they're wrong, right?
No.
You just know people in the walks of life. There are some people that just never like to give in and admit they screwed up. There's other people that are always apologetic, even when they were probably right. Oh, you know, I'm really sorry about that. I could have done a better job on that. I'm sorry about that. And you have everything in between. You have the full spectrum of the refs. So Barry Trotz's belief is, get the guys, it's a smaller group of people, and we'll get a better level of consistency because we're away from the situation. So that can't go into effect until the playoffs. So that's the story. That's the earliest we could see that go into effect is at the end of the regular season. That's what the GMs want, but now there's the referees get to weigh in on that. They may disagree. So I would look for that to be the next chapter. Do the referees acquiesce and say, okay, that's what the GMs want. We'll go with it. Or do they fight it?
The elimination of the tablet?
I still think they would be able to look at the tablet and weigh in and talk through it with the Situation Room. I think they should be able to do that. They should be able to tell the situation, this is what I saw.
Why do you think this has become such a huge issue? I don't.
Well, okay,
I don't
let's
view it as bad as they see it.
No, but
like the NFL catch was out of control. Now
it was.
They are now fixing it, and you can tell. Basically, now it's gonna have to be so obvious for them not to call it a catch. You watch this year in the NFL.
Yeah,
to be so blatant for them not to call it a catch. Anything you think is iffy, they're gonna call it a catch.
I agree, and I think
they'll probably go the far extreme the other way.
But okay, so the parallel for the NHL and the catch would be the kicking the puck into the net. They got carried away with what was a kick, and they would say, oh, well, I think that might have been a kick, so let's wave it off. I think the NFL has done a good job. They've done the same thing. Reset it. Hey, if it looks like a catch, it's a catch. And I think what they have gone to is in the rule book, they have said, hey, I know the rule says this and everything, but if the call on the field is a catch, we're not going to nitpick at the rule, you know, unless it is a full, clear, egregious mistake. We're going with the call on the field. That's a good way to go. But right now, the NFL still has the guy looking at the tablet or the peep show or whatever it was, right? The referee on the field still has that control, right?
Yes.
Major League Baseball now has that central intelligence room, the situation room has been created in Major League Baseball. So I think one thing that's got to be ironed out, I wonder which way it's going to go. Will there be more and more control from that central league office where they have the situation room?
That's what I'm trying to say. Who's spearheading this?
Yeah.
Like in other words, it's like we can see why it got to that point. Why is it to this point where they've made this to be a big to-do? And I don't think all season we were sitting here talking about a big to-do where, my goodness, they're going to have to figure out this goalie interference thing. Have we joked? Have we talked? It's hard to figure it out. We don't know from call to call what it's going to be. Yes. But is that what it is? Is this really going to change that? Now it's going to be clear cut? And now every time we see it, we're going to go, oh, well, we know what the situational room is going to call on this.
I think every sport.
What is it eliminating?
I think every sport has to determine. And I think the NFL and the NHL with goaltender interference, football with the catch rule, has come to the conclusion. Why did we put in replay to begin with? It was to eliminate the glaring mistakes that could change a season for a team. So let's reset it and let's come from the idea of go with the call on the field or on the ice unless it is a huge, egregious mistake. Let's not meticulously go through all the details like they are in football and it's gotten out of control with the catch. It was getting out of control, I think, with goalie interference. It definitely was getting out of control with kicking the puck into the net. I think it's getting out of control in baseball with the tag plays. How about, remember, there was a guy that got picked off of first base. I can't remember who it was. Jose Lobaton, maybe, in the division series, Cubs against the Nationals. There's a pickoff throw, and the guy, he beats the throw back to the base. He might have come off this, you know, just a millimeter off the base, and they called him out. It's getting ridiculous with the call on the field and the delays that happen as a result. So I think that needs to be the baseline idea. I'm in favor of that. But, of course, the technology. Remember we were talking to Tim Corbin yesterday about back-to-back calls in his game. The SEC now has in baseball a replay system. They don't have the camera technology that they do for an SEC football game. So you got to go by the camera angle.
Well, I know, and he went out there and he said because they were light on cameras.
Can you guys even see what's going on?
And he's like, I can't answer that. I can't tell you that.
So it definitely has to be able to be an egregious mistake. That's probably why that's the idea of putting replay in there. But that's something to keep watching. It's going to be an evolving process.
And
wait till the NFL decides to have a challenge for pass interference, which if they ever do get goalie interference situated where they like it, which they haven't yet. I'm sure I'm sitting back there in football going, man, I would never let that happen. I would never vote for pass interference. But you know there's probably some coaches that would say, okay, to eliminate an egregious screw-up, give me a chance to challenge a pass interference, a 50-yard bomb, where they call it. Would you like the ability to erase a really big screw-up by an official?
That'd be tough. To go down that path. All right, quickly. What's the right number of people to have in the situational room throughout the course of a season and playoffs? Because you don't want to have a different set of eyes in there every night.
I think they've identified six as the six retired referees that will be in there.
And they will just rotate season long until the end.
Right. Now, I think that also comes with a new set of challenges. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's the end-all, be-all. Oh, everything will be fine now. Those six guys, they're trained in being on the ice and making calls on the ice. They're not trained in watching camera replays.
We will continue discussing rules, new rules in baseball on the other side. That's coming up in the fourth and final hour, 102.5 The Game.